New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Blenders. It's Sean O'Connell, the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast, here to introduce you guys to a bonus episode, a brand new interview that we have to close out the year. A returning guest, one of our favorites here on the show, Helena Rain, who's the director of Baby Girl. We had had Helena come on the show when she had the film Bodies, Bodies, Bodies come out in theaters. I was a huge fan of that. I can remember watching that with Gabe. The two of us were at South by Southwest when the film had its world premiere and really just being blown away by the style that she brought to that story. The story itself also was really good, and the performances, one of those ones that just sort of keeps you guessing. You never really know where it's going to go. And the way she talks about it in this interview as well, too, now that she can sort of reflect on how it was received by the audience, is really interesting, because she admits she's basically playing with an audience's expectations. And when you hopefully got a chance to listen to our top tens of 2024, that episode's available on the channel right now, you'll hear that we all picked a movie called Strange Darling, which is another great sort of horror drama thriller that messes with audience expectations. So Helena's a little bit ahead of the curve and an incredibly smart filmmaker, and we definitely wanted to get her back on for this new movie, Baby Girl, getting a ton of attention, obviously, for its emphasis on the sexual relationship between Nicole Kidman's character and a much younger intern that's applying for a job or taking on a job at her company where she is the CEO. It's a sort of dominatrix, submissive relationship, and it's how the two of them are sort of exploring it going forward. And we knew that Helena would have a ton to say about it, and not just like the themes overall, but the making of, which I found to be really, really fascinating, and I loved being able to pick her brain for this. This is going to be our last interview of 2024. We'll have plenty more coming next year, so make sure you guys hit subscribe while you're here. But before you go, please listen to Helena Rain joining the Real Blend podcast, returning to the show to talk about her brand new film in theaters now called Baby Girl.
So sorry to keep you waiting. I was looking for a banana, but I got it.
How dare you?
I got it.
So glad to have you back on the show.
You both look amazing. I like your shirt and I like your suit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're the Real Blend podcast. We like to focus on the ins and outs of the filmmaking process. So as we like to say to everybody, please feel free to get as geeky as you possibly can.
Nice.
And specifically, we have a lot of filmmakers who listen to the show, aspiring filmmakers. And I want to start here because I was such an enormous fan of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. I was at South by Southwest to get a chance to see it at the premiere with a full audience. And I was really thrilled to see it get its audience later on and have success at the box office. And so I want to know, what kind of doors that movie opened for you after the fact, in the wake of it? Did you find it a little bit easier to get to pursue the projects that you wanted to do and maybe get the material off the ground that you were wanting to do?
Yes, for me, Bodies, Bodies, Bodies has completely changed my life. I used to live in the Netherlands and I was an actress there. And then I made a small movie called Instinct, which was my debut, which is a Dutch language movie. And that traveled a little bit to festivals. And then A24 saw Instinct. I think it was at the London Film Festival. And then they asked me to direct Bodies. And in the beginning, I was like, what? Like me? I'm an art house stage actress doing art house things. I'm going to direct a horror movie. But then when I kind of came up with the idea that there wouldn't be a killer, because at that moment there was still a killer in the script, and the idea that everything that happened, that all the bodies would drop because of group behavior, and the question of, is the beast outside of us or inside of us? Then I got like, oh my God, that I can really, that's my key in. And then Sarah Delap, who is an amazing playwright, and me coming from the theater, we joined forces and we did the rewrite. And then it just became this horror comedy, if you will, about Gen Z. And yes, that opened a lot of doors. That opened every door in the US for me, because before that, I don't think a lot of, you know, people in America were aware of me at all. Mm-hmm. And so that was an amazing bridge to then, after that, A24 said, well, why don't you write something from scratch? And I had never done that because Instinct I wrote with another woman, Esther Gerritsen. Mm-hmm. It's a very hard name for you guys, but we say Gerritsen. And I wrote Red Light, a TV show with her as well. And so then for A24 to say, hey, you should write something all by yourself in English, that just gave me so much confidence and so much inspiration. And then I started to write Baby Girl.
And that leads me to the question about, I want to make a metaphorical comparison between your job as a director and Nicole's character as a CEO. And the idea of her character kind of having to be a collaborator, but also a nurturer, which is obviously a line that is said and also in the trailer. But can you speak on that idea of being a filmmaker and maybe the comparison to a CEO and the idea of the nurturing aspect of what you have to do, but the collaborating aspect of what you have to do, but also, you know, you really have to run things in that way. Can you speak on all those, like, those little details of how you have to balance that all?
Oh, I love that question. It's an amazing question. Yes, it is, of course, a lot you have to deal with because it's, especially in New York, there are certain rules and you have a big crew. You know, you have 250 men and women that you have to lead. So on one hand, you have to really prepare yourself, I think. I think for young filmmakers, I think preparation is always key. Like, I've been with a theater company, Ivo van Hove, who's a famous theater director, for 20 years. And I've always watched him prepare himself really in a way where once he's in the rehearsal room, you know, he can actually let go because he knows everything. He knows an answer to every single question. And then he can be in the moment and be open to everybody's ideas and everybody's emotions and everybody's insecurities. And that's the nurturer that then comes, you know. So on one hand, the leader, you got to prepare yourself. You got to do everything that is in your control to bring it to the moment that you have to shoot. And then when you're shooting, you actually really have to be in the moment, right? Because when an actor in that moment is doing something amazing, but it is absolutely not what you wanted when you were sitting in your apartment, you know, thinking it all out, you still have to be open enough and sort of calm enough to see that magic happening in this actor's eyes and let go of your own idea and be completely there with their idea. So that is kind of the art of it all for me, the balance between being super prepared and really being very clear to everyone what you want, how you see it, and then in the moment to be completely collaborative and a nurturer. And also show them that you take them seriously. Not only the actors, but it also goes for all of your heads of departments, but also for the whole entire crew.
And, sure.
And so my method for that is to do a big PowerPoint presentation in the very beginning for all the heads of department. And for the actors, I do it too, for the lead actors, but then individually. But it's the same PowerPoint where I really explain why this story now, how does it, what does it look like? What are the themes? What is the tone? What the whole thing? And so that everybody feels involved and then everybody starts to really work towards that very clear vision.
Were you raised by teachers?
What?
Were you raised by teachers?
No, I was raised by radical hippies off the grid. That's why I am very afraid of chaos and very obsessed with structure.
Helena, because of that, I want to ask this. We asked this a couple of times. Are you more comfortable, or which do you prefer? Do you like being on set capturing, or do you love going into the editing room and finding out what your movie is at that point?
No, I think I am best at, I think I'm very good at being on set. I think my main like forte is to be with actors and to really make them feel so safe that they can really discover areas within themselves that they didn't know were there. But that's not because I'm so good at all. That's because I was an actor. So I know exactly how embarrassing acting is. Acting is incredibly vulnerable. So I think I'm really good at being a leader that is a modern leader, you know, that is very much there for everybody to answer any question, but it's also very much there to hear everybody's thoughts. I'm best at that. But then, of course, the editing is something that I'm more and more obsessed with because, as I think a lot of filmmakers say, it's where you actually, you know, create the final painting, if you will. And sure. So that is just, but also I don't want to underestimate, or how do you say it? Don't want to downplay sound. Sound to me is also half of everything.
It's everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so much about how you experience being inside the story instead of just looking at the story. For me, sound.
So something true. As simple as just setting down that glass of milk.
Yes.
And just sound on the table. It's like, it's everything.
Everything, yeah.
Helena, one thing I find interesting, and this, I think it's fascinating what we don't see in films and the collaboration that we as audience members have with your movies and you trusting us to fill in the gaps, whether it be visually. And Sean and I were just discussing this. This is a random movie to bring up, the movie Seven, where David Fincher doesn't really show the killings. You have to imagine them as an audience member. And to use your film as an example, there's a lot of the sexual elements in the film where it's either blocked by a person or we don't see everything that happens. We fill that stuff in. We have to almost like lean around the frame, like, oh, what's going on? What are they doing? And I think it's a really cool tool that a filmmaker has where you don't need to show us everything. We can also collaborate with you and visualize with you. How do you balance that as a filmmaker, knowing that we are also going to go along with you and fill in these gaps and fill in these moments?
I love that you say Seven as an example, because first of all, that's one of my favorite movies. And like we all know, I mean, it's such an archetype, but anything that happens in the wings and we have to imagine is way more horrifying than anything yes. that you can actually look at, right? And sure. so that's an old sort of law that I learned in the theater. And I did all these classical plays. So Chekhov, Shakespeare, Ibsen, O'Neill, they are masters at that. Masters. Because in the theater, you don't always have the means because it's a live performance. So you have to let a lot of these things happen in the wings. And you can sometimes feel an audience just like going through something where you're like, it's all in their mind. It's all in their mind. And so with sexuality, I don't think a lot of people would believe it, but because a lot of people who know me think I'm this wild, crazy person, but I am very prude and I do not like to see certain sex acts in my face. Like I two bodies just like that, it doesn't tell me anything. But a scene in which a man orders milk for a woman on the other end of the bar and she drinks the whole glass of white milk is to me way more arousing than anything else. And again, that's just a story. That's just a suggestion. That's all in your mind. And for me, sexuality, and I think that's for a lot of humans the case, it is about a story. It's all about a projection. It's half your own fantasy, half whatever someone else is really doing. And especially in this film is about power, control, and of course, erotic. So it's all about get on your knees, stand in the corner. And that's like, oh, that's shocking to see. But what is actually happening? Nothing. It's literally, they're not even touching. So I find that so interesting that especially talking about this movie, that people experience it as extremely sexual. But when they, what you say, that's why I love your question, when they actually look at it, if they really see frame for frame, there's almost no sex acts in it.
Sure.
Right. And that's kind of why I think the visual, I won't spoil anything, but the ending scene, which calls back a scene earlier in the film, is basically being blocked by the actors.
Yes.
And you kind of have to figure out what's going on.
Yes.
And obviously you can figure it out based on their facial reactions.
Yes.
But I think it's just a really cool tool because you do kind of go, wait, what's going on here? Like, what are they doing? I think you almost lean into the film. It's more immersive.
Yes, way more. And because you have to use your own thoughts while you're experiencing the movie, it becomes very personal. And I think the whole, because of course we're in conversation with all the 90s thrillers and we're going into the cliches on purpose. We're using the archetypes. We're playing with the expectation of the audience, thinking it's going to go a certain way. But then we do it in a way where, or at least I hope it comes across as that, where it's incredibly vulnerable. And from that vulnerability, there comes a humor. Because Harris Dickinson, who plays her young lover, her intern, to Nicole Kidman, who plays this very powerful CEO, he's also exploring his masculinity. So when he says, on your knees, and then he's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
That
it's
is
awkward.
He almost shows, it's awkward, and he almost shows the actor behind the performance, which makes it almost like a breaking through the fourth wall, where there's also a scene in which Nicole almost asks for a line, where she says, what are the words? What do you want me to say? Because their whole dynamic is a performance. It's all about theater. That's also why we made Antonio Banderas a theater director. We see her rehearse with a kind of like a media expert, a marketing expert, how she should behave, how she should speak. So it's constantly about performance. And sex, to me, can feel like that. You know, especially if you have the courage to try stuff out in the bedroom, it can also feel like, oh my God, am I really going to like do this? Or am I going to say stuff in your ear? And I'm so ashamed. And that's what this movie is about. It's kind of like a
tribute. You're so right.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah. There is a performative
element.
Such an interesting thing to that. Wow.
And yet, okay, cool. But there is a cue in your movie that I guess I've always associated with sexuality, and it was so reinforced. The saxophone solo from Never Tear Us Apart by NXS.
Yes, I love that you say that.
Is the sexiest
so sexy
moment in a pop song. And it makes me think that, like, you couldn't have your movie without that song.
Exactly. But this is so true because, so there was one day that I got up and I was like, I think my movie needs a montage. Because of course we're entering in dark waters every now and then with my film, and I still wanted to really be open to an audience. I want everybody to enjoy this film. I don't want it to be niche or where you're like, well, that's not about me. So I was thinking, and I love in American films, I love American movies being from the Netherlands, and I love these montages that often happen in American films. I just love it. And I thought, because I'm in conversation with these older movies, I should have this kind of 90s montage. And so we literally first created the montage to just a beat or something. But, and then we had it. And then I was like, okay, so I have father figure, because I knew that I had that in my movie already before I started writing. And then I said, but I want another song of that world and of that, because it's a Nicole Kidman, Halina kind of like generation, right? It needs to come mm-hmm. from that era. So I typed in Spotify the year of Feather Free. And then this song popped up and I loved this. And I was like, this is a sign from God.
It's incredible.
And
it's
so we just song. Put it under the montage, and the craziest thing happened. And this is, to honest the truth, that moment that he says, why don't you clean that up, right before the saxophone solo, there's a silence. And it literally was at that moment that the song just dropped. And he said, why don't you clean that up? And then, and I was like, I can't believe it. And then, so I almost cried. And we were my editor and I were like, we were screaming at each other. Then next day I call A24. I said, okay, we need to get the rights to this song. Like, there's no way, you're not going to tell me we don't have the money. And they were like, okay, we'll try to get it. And then we tried it. And I don't know who that are, but those people, they said no. They said it was a hard no.
I was afraid about that.
No. And I didn't sleep for a week. And I tried every other song that I could think of. Nothing worked. Nothing worked.
Right.
And then I called Nicole, just because we became so close, and we called a lot. So I was just like, I am so depressed. And she said, give me a couple of days. And she did it. She got the rights. She did it. She got to the real people. And she did it for us. Amazing. I'm grateful to her. I love that.
This episode of Real Blend is brought to you by Rosetta Stone. The new year is nearly here, and it's a perfect time to reflect on your achievements and set goals for the future. Make learning a new language a part of your journey moving forward with Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone has been trusted for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. It's designed for long-term retention with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. And it's available on desktop and mobile, so you can continue to learn whenever and wherever is best for you. Start the new year off with a resolution you can reach. Today, Real Blend listeners can take advantage of this new year's special of Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your new year's offer at rosettastone.com/today today.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I often bring up this topic, and Sean has heard me say this a lot, but I find score to be such a leading character in films, especially your film in particular. But I want to take it in a different angle, because your score in this film is all about the tone, and there's like a playfulness in there, and there's an aspect to it that I found interesting, and it juxtaposes obviously kind of some of the scenes and what's happening with the actors. So as you're directing a film, generally speaking, and I don't know if this is the case for this movie, your score is done after production. And sometimes you'll edit with a temp, et cetera. But this score is so specific in terms of, I don't want to use the word manipulate, but leading us in a direction of questioning what's going on and kind of feeling the tone of it, that I have to imagine you had an idea of what this would sound like in your mind when you were directing, because you have to tell Nicole and Harris kind of what their tone is. And then the score almost has to juxtapose a bit. I don't know if you can you speak on that journey for you, and kind of how you know how it's going to lead us and how it's going to lead their performances.
Yeah, so I always knew that the tone of this movie, just like with Bodies, was going to be hard, because the tone I wanted for the actors also, the whole tone of the whole movie, I wanted would be that it was fun, you know, really funny, that would make people laugh, and at the same time, very sexual. And not often, they don't often go together. The same as horror and humor is also hard, because if you want to have the audience be afraid, how can you at the same time have them laugh about jokes? Because laughing is always a relief. So, but I was so sure that that was the right path for Baby Girl, that it should be comedic, but at the same time, very hot. And so we worked a lot on that. Like, we talked a lot about that. Like, what is that? And again, that is for me the humanity. And coming to the score, so Cristobal, who is the composer, he's an amazing genius musician. And he created the score for The White Lotus. And I think The White Lotus has exactly that strange like tone, where it's dark humor, but it's also incredibly funny, but it's also very unsettling. And his music has a very sensual, primal nature. And so we always talked about, even before we started, you know, when I was still writing, me and Cristobal were talking about how, even when they're blackmailing each other, even when everything is at stake and Harris threatens to cancel her, you know, and she can lose her whole family, her husband, her job, everything, the music should always signal to the audience, this is a sexual game. Because my movie is not a documentary. My movie is a fable, is a comedy of manner. So the music should always signal to the audience, with the breathing and the wolf growling and whatever he does in this music, it should always signal this is a sexual game, and you never know when they are playing or when they are actually in real life.
Right, so that's what I'm interested in, because like you have to tell them, the actors, to act a certain way, and that score is then going to do something almost the opposite.
Yeah, so
that's so interesting to me.
Yeah, you always, in the acting, I think, even in Bodies the same, like, of course, Bodies is supposed to be funny, but in the moment, we have to act like the stakes are, it couldn't be higher. Like, even when they say the most ridiculous things to each other, it's still, like, it should be life and death for them, you know, which it literally was, of course, in Bodies. And with this film, the same. When they are, when they have to, because also part of their kink, and part of Romy's kink for sure, is that she actually feels that she's a little bit in danger. That's, and we might judge that, we might find that very wrong of her, but that is what the actual turn on is, that there's an actual risk. And so even when she's crying, so to say, she's still aroused, you know? And so that is what I wanted to sort of get to on a level with the music, because then the music can sort of guide you to say, ah, so something like, for instance, when she undresses for him, right? And she cries and she's like, I don't like my body. That's very real. But at the same time, it's also a game. It's a game of surrender. It's a game of control. It's a game of being this sort of vulnerable, in this vulnerable world with a younger man telling you what to do. That it arouses her. That is like the opposite of what she might be in daily life, where she has to be the leader, the mother, the nurturer.
Helena, I want to take a left turn if we could and just talk about somebody who, obviously, your leads are brilliant and they're fantastic, but I'm not sure enough people are talking about Antonio Banderas.
Yes, I agree.
Oh my God.
How important he is to this equation.
So important.
The movie loses an impact without the feeling that you get of what he's going through when he's trying to meet her at certain levels, but then also when he finds out what's going on. And I just wanted you to talk about his performance and what you thought he brought, like the importance of his character and specifically what he brought to that role that added a balance to what you were trying to do.
So it was incredibly important when we were creating the script that we knew that the marriage should feel to the audience that it was very much working. You should really believe that they have a history together, a humor, a warmth. And so we needed someone who could you know, do that together with Nicole, who would have that kind of chemistry. But also, I really wanted the audience to think, oh my God, this is such an attractive man. Because the moment you're going to think, oh yeah, of course she should cheat, then then the movie loses in complexity. Because the issue is not that Antonio is not prepared or strong enough or whatever to dominate her, to do any of these sexual fantasies she has. The problem is that she's ashamed and that she doesn't dare to talk about it. And so so the casting was incredibly important. And then A24 came up with the idea of Antonio Banderas. And I thought it was genius because he was an icon, you know, and back in the day, he was this also like a sex symbol, you know, and he still is. And so masculine and macho. But I said, we're never going to get him ever, ever. But then he read it and he immediately said, I want to support this story. I want to surrender myself completely to it. I'm going to do everything. I want to be part of it. And I think he doesn't have as much screen time as Nicole has, but he shows in all these scenes his full range. You know, he goes from being very vulnerable to being very sweet, like, and then incredibly aggressive and fighting Harris, and then, sort of breaking. And I love every part of his performance. And I agree with you. There should be much more, you know, conversation about it.
I hope it starts here.
This might be a nerdy question, but I'm curious about it because he brings up Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. And I think that was shot 239. And I think this film is 185, if I'm not mistaken, in terms of aspect ratio. And yes, that choice is, it has to be narratively driven. There's got to be a reason why you choose to shoot a film with a different ratio, because you get more of the image up and down. It's not anamorphic or whatever that choice would be with your lens choices. Do you think of that narratively as well in your mind? Like, why do you feel like Bodies, Bodies, Bodies would be 239? Why this film would be a 185 ratio?
Well, how we do it is because I was not a trained movie director. For me, some of these things are quite intuitive. And so what we do then is we do a test with the different ratios so I can see it. So we do a camera test like a lot of people do. We are obsessed with doing camera tests, me and Jasper. Jasper Wolf is my DP, he's from the Netherlands as well.
Yeah.
He shot my three films and I worked a lot with him as an actress. And he is incredible and has his own vision, always brings his own ideas, which I love. So we're very much a duo in that sense. And then so what we do is we shoot a camera test and we do all different lightings and different movements with the actors. And then we project that in a cinema and then we're showing different aspect ratios and we're talking about that. And for this specific movie, it was very important to me that we had two layers in the cinematography. And that is actually part of every single thing we're doing. Everything is about that on one hand, we are animals and beasts, and on the other hand, we're civilized. And in the cinematography, I want to make that clear in the sense that we have this whole language where he's operating the camera. He literally has it himself on his shoulder. He's with the actors and he's close to them. He's following them. It's very, like, you see everything. It's very sensual and primal. And then we have this other cinematography that is wide shots, a drone, you know, like overhead shots. It's like when we film the robots, for instance, when we're flying over the robots in the factory.
I love that shot.
Yeah, it's so cool. Yeah, I fought for that so hard because it was really so hard to get into a factory. It was the worst. It was, we got to know. They're so secretive, those kind of factories.
Really?
Yes, it was so, we fought so hard to get it because I didn't want to.
That was practical?
Yes, that was practical. That was practical.
Wow.
Yes.
It looks amazing. I thought I was like, they had to do the CG.
We couldn't afford that. We didn't have money for that. Otherwise, we would have done that at a certain moment because I was discouraged because we just couldn't. And I said, it is crucial because that is, of course, the whole point of the movie is the sort of, you know, you see her, she's crawling into her study. I don't want to give away too much, but this has been written about so much. You know, we open with a performative orgasm that turns out to be not real. And then she's crawling into her study with her laptop and she watches porn. And then from that moment, and she really orgasms like almost like a grizzly bear. And from that moment, I want to show those robots as like, you know, that is the other side of all of that. We have the beast versus the machine. And that is how Jasper and I approached the cinematography, and everything was informed by that kind of idea, like the civilized and the animalistic at all times.
So I asked this only because you've mentioned the 90s thrillers that were inspirational to this film, Indecent Proposal obviously being one of them. And at this time, Demi Moore is also making the rounds, you know, on film festival circuits with The Substance, and is obviously so seminal to those early films. Is in a film that is also discussing an older woman and her the way she perceives her body. Have you guys crossed paths at all? Have you been able to speak to her at all about some of these topics? I was just curious if you had a chance to have a conversation with her.
We do, like, that's of course the fun thing about this moment in time where you kind of like, it's kind of like a group. You meet each other constantly. Like, I was talking to Pamela Anderson yesterday, who I so admire and can't wait to see that film. Demi Moore,
it's really good.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that film. I'm so psyched for that. I saw The Substance. I love The Substance. I also think it's an incredibly important movie that it talks about similar things as Baby Girl, but in a very different world, in a very different way. But I think there are definitely similarities. And yes, I just expressed all my enthusiasm for it when I was talking to Demi. And of course, for me, she's incredibly important because she's in so many of those films in the 90s, you know? So,
sure.
I mean, I adore her, and I couldn't believe I was in her presence. And now, I'm just so happy that all these topics get talked about and that so many women who are not 25 are making the rounds right now and are being so successful with Demi, Nicole, Pamela. It's just, you know, and Kate Winslet is also in the conversation. Like, there's so many amazing actresses that are celebrated right now in very interesting, modern work. And I'm just proud of all of us that is happening and that people are really digging it and that people are hungry for it. And it's an amazing time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. That's great.
I was curious, when you work with someone like Nicole Kidman, the filmography that she's had, the filmmakers that she's worked with have been remarkable. I mean, like, I always think of Kubrick because I think of Eyes Wide Shut. Like, do you get a chance to sit down and talk about the other directors that she's worked with? Like, do you pick her brain about the direction that they've given her over the years? Because when you're taking on someone like Nicole Kidman, there's a legacy of so many filmmakers who have directed her over the years. Like, I'm just curious what you geek out about. Do you talk to her about, like, Kubrick and all those guys and all the filmmakers she's worked with?
No, of course, I'm in total awe. Like, Lars von Trier, Jonathan Glazer, Kubrick. I mean, those are my heroes. And they sort of created my whole, like, how I think about storytelling and all of those things. So, yes, of course, I ask her a lot of questions. At the same time, I do think that it is very important that we created our own female bubble, you know, because I think in my own little, much smaller world of the European theater, I worked with these very dominant geniuses as well, all males. I've never, like, all the plays I was in were written by Shakespeare, Ibsen, O'Neill, you know, so we both grew up in that kind of world. And that was, I think we're both really connected to the themes that those geniuses had. And I still look back on it with so much pride and joy, but it was very important to me that with Baby Girl, we showed that part of us, like we almost show the male gaze, and then hopefully we slowly venture into the female gaze, whatever the difference is, because only God, like, what is the difference really? But we're exploring that in my movie. So we're showing the old, and like we're also showing the new, because the film is also very much about two generations. It's very much about Harris Dickinson, Sophie Wilde, and Esther McGregor, who plays Nicole's oldest daughter, and how they view sexuality, how they view their relationship with their bodies, their kink positivity. When Antonio Banderas says to Harris after they fight, female masochism is a male construct, he just says, that's a dated idea. That's a dated idea of sexuality. You are wrong.
Right.
Which I think is so funny. And yeah, I don't know which opinion I agree with. You know, I might agree with both. Yeah. And so I feel that that is also something that is very important in our movie.
Yeah. Alina, we cannot wait for more people to see this movie. And thank you so much for coming back on the show. You are welcome here anytime.
I love you guys. This is so fun to really talk about, to go into the depth of it. It's such a joy. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate both of you.
Thanks for making movies that want to ask these types of questions. We, like, really enjoy it. So thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you so much to our good friends at A24 for helping us get Helena on the show. We thought it was really important to get her on. First off, I think she's just an incredible guest. Really, really smart in terms of the way that she thinks about coming into filmmaking and choosing the types of stories that she wants to tell. And trust me, Baby Girl is one of these ones that you're going to want to talk about afterwards. So make sure you go see it with a big group. It is a conversation starter. You're going to be debating whether or not certain characters should have gone as far as they did. Maybe they didn't go far enough. There's some really great sequences that I wish we got a chance to really break down with her in terms of how she filmed them. One of them at a rave. I wanted to sort of talk to her about putting that together. We didn't get a chance to. But there's a lot to discuss. You're going to want to chew over a ton as you're coming out of Baby Girl. And we'll see if it continues to be in the awards race. Nicole Kidman's getting a lot of heat. Maybe even Helena gets into the conversation for director or screenplay. A lot of things that we can talk about as Baby Girl continues to roll into theaters and maybe through the awards conversation. Again, I just want to thank you guys so much for all of your support that you've given to the show throughout 2024 and since we started as an awards blend show. So take a drink if you're listening. We're really, really excited by all the work that we get to do here. We love getting together on a weekly basis to talk about movies that we love and shine a spotlight onto films and filmmakers that we think deserve more attention. Hopefully you guys got a chance to listen to our top 10 lists. That's a really, really fun show. It's available on the channel right now. And just to make sure that you're here for everything that we do in 2025 and beyond, make sure you hit subscribe, turn on your notifications, do us a favor, share the show with a friend or a family member over this holiday season and into the new year. Let them know that the Real Blend community is a really great place for them to come and learn about new films, old films, just, you know, movie love in general. It's what we try to do here. We try to keep it really positive. And have a ton of fun. And we'll be back in 2025 with brand new episodes. But this is our last one for the year. We're going to be off next week. So we miss you already. Happy New Year to everybody. We'll see you in 2025. Be well to each other. And again, thank you so much for all the support that you guys continue to give to The Real Blend Show.